Hello, I'm Dan Aykroyd, and welcome to this fine motion picture emporium. It's nice to know you're here tonight, rather than at home shoving cheap little plastic cartridges into cheap imported video systems that keep you and your family hostage in your own home or apartment. Now let's face it, big screen entertainment is what it's all about. We've enjoyed it for years. Movies are great. There's nothing like a good movie, or even a bad one for that matter.
One podcast, two assholes, and infinite possibilities. Strap in, for you're about to experience the brilliant awesomeness that is A Couple of Average Joes Movie Review Show. You're welcome.
Go. Welcome back, my friends, to the podcast that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. I am Joe Spiegel. Sitting across from me is the guy who always fucking interrupts me before I'm done introducing him. Go ahead.
Interrupting cow.
Moo.
Moo.
Who are you again?
Mike Sutherland.
Mike. All right. This is our War Dogs episode. We're going to talk about that wonderful film. We'll also be talking about my Netflix pick of the week, which is Homeland.
Homeland.
And Mike, yours is going to be?
Homeland. Meet the Robinsons.
Meet the Robinsons. Okay. The animated Disney film from, I think, 2008?
Seven.
Seven? Okay. Yeah. That, a couple of entertainment-related items, such as they're making some movies into TV series, Get Shorty and The Departed. Also, Mike's going to talk about The Return of the Caped Crusaders.
And Stand Against Evil.
And Stand Against Evil, starring John Z. McGinley. All right, all that and more in A Couple of Average Joes. Take it away.
Johnny.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Meanwhile,
how you doing?
All right, let's do it.
All right,
hold
so
on, hold on.
What?
Good okay, so.
All right, so.
Okay, so.
Okay, so.
All right, so.
Okay, so.
Okay, so.
This week, Mike and I went and saw War Dogs. The film directed by Todd Phillips, also co-written by him, and two other co-writers who I don't need to name, starring Jonah Hill and...
Damon Lindelof?
No. Jonah Hill and Miles Teller.
Kevin Pollak, Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. Now, Miles Teller, I can only remember him from like two other things, which was Fantastic Four from last year and Project X. And I barely remember from Project X. So I don't know what else he's been in. I haven't really took the time to really look him up because I don't really give a shit. But when I first saw him in movies, I don't know. He just seemed like, you know, another young actor who they're trying to bring up and shit. And I didn't really care either way for him. But once we saw him in this movie, my opinion has changed of him because the man holds his own.
Oh, holy fuck.
He was in Whiplash. Holy shit, I forgot about that.
And Divergent.
And I own Whiplash on Blu-ray. Yeah, he was excellent in Whiplash. I forgot about that shit. Anyway.
Get a gerb.
God, I have the best memory in the world.
21 and over.
Yeah, so he was in Whiplash, okay, where, you know, he's a drummer, and he gets, you know, verbally abused by the new Commissioner Gordon.
Right.
So, anyway, the movie, in both of our opinions, is that it's way better than what Rotten Tomatoes is giving it, okay? Because right now, Rotten Tomatoes is at 58% approval rating.
What was ours?
Ours was 55. I gave it a 55, and you gave it a 48.
Right, so you win.
Yeah, but, I mean, still, the movie's better than that for both of us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the better movies this year.
Yeah, from reading other people's reviews of this movie... Oh, the general consensus is this. They don't like the movie because they say it glorifies these two guys that are profiting off of war and that there's no true consequences for them. You know,
true consequences. One of them got 4 years in jail.
Yeah.
The other one took a plea bargain.
Which, according to the critics, apparently sounds like a slap on the wrist. So what I'm saying is it seemed like because of that, it tainted their whole overview of the film.
Well, I mean, okay, if you want to take a slap on the wrist, I mean, they're not allowed to. The company that they created, AEY, is not allowed to do any business at that time, which was 2008.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2008, they're not allowed to go back into business as AEY until 2022.
Yeah.
That's 15 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Plus, they pretty much had to pay all that money back, $300 million.
Uh-huh.
So it was a $300 million fine or more. 4 years in jail for one of them.
Yeah.
4 months in jail for another one.
He's 7 years of home arrest.
7 months. 7 months.
Yeah.
Not 7 years. Kevin Pollak's character got jail time.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, whatever. Fuck these critics.
I agree. I totally agree. Look, we've seen a lot of shitty and substandard films this year.
Glorifying war.
This is one of the best movies I've seen so far this year.
Yeah.
I was entertained from start to finish. You know, I mean, there's little problems here and there, which we're about to get into. But overall, this movie is smart. It's well shot. It's well edited. You know, it doesn't, it's poorly marketed. That's one of the problems. They market it as this fucking party movie.
Right.
With gunrunners, and it's not.
Yeah.
You know, look, I know why they did it the way that they did it, because they wanted to sell more tickets. They wanted to sell it to the, you know, the fucking Seth Rogen crowd or whatever you want to call it,
the
right?
The Jonah Hill crowd.
Yeah. And it...
the Todd Phillips hangover crowd.
Yeah, that's not what appeals to me. What appeals to me is intelligent filmmaking.
Yeah. Now, I didn't want to see this film because, for the pure fact, I'm not a fan of Jonah Hill. I think he's a pompous ass, and that the perception of him that he gives off in Hollywood is absolutely 100% false,
uh-huh.
You know, based off of stories and reports and all this other stuff of how he really is.
Yeah.
You know, he's a huge douche. And
yeah.
Nobody wants to fucking deal
like
with him.
Fame has gone to his head.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And that's fine.
Well,
I want to go back to the critic thing.
Yeah.
So they say that is glorifying war. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, it's glorifying war. So when Gone Girl came out a couple years back, was that glorifying faking rape and murder?
No, apparently it was okay because a woman did it.
Oh. So when Hateful Eight came out, was that glorifying racism?
According to Spike Lee.
Yeah. Well, that's one person.
And maybe Al Sharpton.
And trying to think. Mad Max, was that glorifying the apocalypse? And, oh, well, here we go. And polygamy?
What about Sausage Party?
Yeah. Yeah, glorifying fucking, you know, whatever.
Racist hot dogs?
Well, that runs the gamut of glorifying everything from, you know, Nazi beer that hates Jews.
Yeah.
And I had to be careful. To you know, hot dogs fucking buns.
Yeah.
That glorified everything from hate speech to drug use.
Apparently, everyone in Hollywood, critic-wise, is afraid of being accused of looking any direction other than what they're told to look at.
I guess so.
And look... To me, does this movie glorify it? No, this movie is based off of a book.
No, it's not. It's based off of an article from Rolling Stone magazine.
Fine.
Sorry. I didn't mean to, but
okay, book, story,
important.
Whatever. It's off of something called Arms and the Dudes by a guy named Guy Law.
Right. Guy Lawson.
Yeah, Guy Lawson. All right. You have to make it a certain way, okay? And what I don't get is...
How three stoners from Miami Beach. Three stoners? Where was the third one?
I don't know, maybe. Look, I'm pretty positive that this is loosely based.
Alex Podrisky.
Okay. So there's another example. Look, this movie changes what, you know, it's originally based off of. It takes one thing, it changes it here, maybe, you know, quote-unquote glorifies this, glorifies that. I didn't see glorification in this movie. I saw a story about two guys. Okay, one guy who is an opportunist snake in the grass, and another guy who's a struggling father-to-be, okay, who's trying to get, you know, trying to make ends meet, okay, to keep his life going. And all that stuff comes in between, okay, the things that come along with it. For them not to tell it any other way, or for them to tell it any other way, wouldn't seem true to the subject material, okay? If you go into a certain kind of field, and you start making money that quickly off the bat, don't you think that you'd be kind of happy celebrating, regardless of what it is you're doing? Because these two characters have already decided what they're doing is okay, correct?
Absolutely. And you are correct. It is a book, but it came out as an article first.
All right. So my problem is that sometimes you just have to see things as a movie, okay? I'll give you an example. When we saw Black Mass, the movie about Whitey Bulger starring Johnny Depp.
Right.
Okay? That was very loosely based off someone's book.
Right.
And a lot of people have refuted some of the, you know, content from that book and from the movie itself. Okay? And so what did we do? Did we take it as a true life story of Whitey Bulger? Kind of not really. We took it as an entertaining, Hollywoodized version of that tale.
Right.
And it was very entertaining. Well shot and well acted.
Yeah.
This is the same thing. Yeah. I don't take this movie as the word on this whole subject. You know, I take it as an entertaining Hollywood version of a true story.
David Packhouse was in the movie.
Yeah, yeah, he showed
up as
the beginning.
Singer. He was doing the one that was singing the Blue Oyster Cult song.
Yeah, he was playing the guitar. I don't expect a movie like this, especially being done by Todd Phillips. I don't expect it to be this statement against, you know, war and profiting and all that shit like that. I take it as an entertaining movie, and that's what it overall is. It's an entertaining movie, and it does delve into these characters. In some respects, it doesn't delve into enough of the characters on their outside lives, but in what they're dealing with throughout the movie, it deals with it very well. You see throughout the film what kind of characters these two guys are that Miles Teller and Jonah Hill portray.
Right.
And throughout the movie, you see little hints of the kind of douchebag that Jonah Hill is. And by close to the end of the film, I mean, it's blatant in your face. You know what kind of a piece of shit this guy is. All right. Miles Teller is pretty much true to his character the whole film. Okay. Does he go over his own personal line to make some money for his family? Sure he does. But who hasn't done that? You know, a lot of people have done that shit. All right.
Yeah. That's my whole problem with this movie is that relationship thing where, was it Anna? Was that her name? Anna,
yeah.
DeArmas? You know.
Her name was in the movie, yeah.
She has this problem with him making all this money.
Yeah.
Because he's quote unquote against the war. And that's the only backstory we get on it.
Yeah.
You know, and then they have a baby and he's kind of forced into making a decision that changes his life path.
Yeah.
But
he's giving her the good life.
Yeah, and she's bitching and moaning about it, and then she finds, you know, and then later on in the film she finds money under a sink or whatever,
yeah.
Right? And she questions him about it, be like, "Bitch, that's like $100,000.
Yeah,
go shopping or something, and shut your fucking mouth."
Yeah, yeah. Look, I can understand part of it at the beginning, her wanting him to be more honest with her. I get it, but this movie covers years. Okay.
Well, yeah,
and all these years that she, and look, years go into it after she already knows that he's running guns.
Here's the problem though. She wants him to be honest. That's such bullshit. That's a fucking Hollywood cop out. That's a honeymooner.
Yeah.
You know, cop out. I want you to be honest with me all the time. No. there's no fucking way. Not in any true open, I'm not saying open, but in a true open communication relationship, is anyone ever 100% honest? And truth of the matter is I've had this conversation with multiple people in my life, you know, not just, you know, my ex-wife and girlfriends and whatnot, but, and I've asked them, if all of a sudden there's $100,000 sitting on the table, are you going to question me about it? And they're like, no, I'm not. Cause I don't think I want to know where it came from.
Yeah.
You know, and this was in relation to other movies that had come out. So it's like it
is forced.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like I said, at the beginning of the movie and the relationship, I understand a little bit of the trust stuff. But once she's already accepted the fact that he's running guns and she knows about it, and now they're making all this money, all of a sudden it's becoming a problem later on. Like, does she really need to know about all the shit that he's going through to get all this done? You know, all that's going, it's like a cop, okay? Let's say it's like a homicide detective, right? Do you really think that he needs to come home every night and tell you about all the shit that he sees every day?
Right.
No, he doesn't. And, you know, she already accepted this. Once she accepted the fact that he's running guns, she needs to leave the fuck alone, okay? As long as he's providing for the family, then what's the problem? Okay? It was forced, okay?
Right.
So that's my problem with it. You know, another little problem I have with the movie is, and I don't know if they did this on purpose or not. I'm not sure. But they barely show anything that has to deal with his friends and family members. There was like one or two quick things, like at the funeral and then at a dinner party. And that was it. I didn't know if they did that on purpose to show how much he's alienated himself from everybody, or if it was just lack of running time or whatever. I don't know. But that kind of bugged me a little bit because I wanted to see a little more insight into, you know, his life besides him running guns. But whatever.
Right.
It's not detrimental to the film. What sells the film is how entertaining it is. The movie is funny, and it's almost all of it is realistically funny. Things that happen to you in your life when you're going through certain situations and the funny things that happen. Sure, what's funny is some of the things that they're going through, they're not funny to them when they're going through it, but later on, you know what shit they're going to be laughing about when they're reminiscing about it, right?
Right.
And that's this movie, is that we're the audience, we're watching it, and so we get to laugh while it's happening because we're not the ones in danger and shit. They're the ones in danger. But once they get through these situations unscathed and stuff like that, it's funny. especially for them to look back on, like, hey, we survived, bitches, kind of thing. And that's why I like the humor in this movie. It's not a comedy. The movie just has humor in it throughout. But it, like I said, it's realistic humor to these characters, and it fits. You know, Jonah Hill's character, he uses his charisma, his knowledge about running guns, and his own sense of humor to keep on progressing throughout the film.
Right.
To sell, you know, win people over, to get deals done, and to keep Miles Teller on that leash that he's got him on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what works. Okay. And Miles Teller, he's just along for the ride, but he's also smart too. If you notice throughout the movie, he's not just sitting there letting everything happen. He's analyzing things. He sees when there's a problem here, when there's a problem there. And so when he gets to the point when he finally realizes that things are going bad and Jonah Hill's not dealing with it properly, you know, he steps up to it. And that's when, of course, Jonah Hill's character starts showing his real true colors. Not just hints of it,
right?
But his real true colors, you know. And one of the funniest things to me is the thing that turned them all, got them all caught, was the fact that he didn't pay the fucking box guy.
$100,000.
Yeah, $100,000. All he had to do was pay that guy, and they would have been fine.
That guy in real life.
Yeah.
That guy disappeared.
Yeah.
He's never been heard from again. Quote unquote.
I bet, just like the taxi driver.
Well, I don't know if the taxi driver. Who knows?
Well, I'm just saying, in the movie, the cab driver disappeared because
right.
his wife was looking for him. Right. But. Anyway, there's plenty of scenes in this movie that have me laughing. I know it had you laughing, too. Just like the part where he goes to his friend's house when he first hooks up with Jonah Hill's character after the funeral, and they go to buy some weed. And then the gangbangers are downstairs.
Right.
And the guy takes his $300. And then Jonah Hill's like, oh, okay. All right. I see how it is. All right. He comes back out with the fucking machine gun, the assault rifle. And he starts spraying it in the air and shit. It was like, he didn't even care about getting his $300 back. It was worth him losing that $300 just to show that off right there at that moment.
Yep.
He didn't give a shit. And that's funny about it. You know, and I noticed that in that scene when Jonah Hill's walking, he looks like a giant egg. Because he's gotten fat again. And from what I've read, he actually gained weight again for the role. I don't know how true that is.
I don't know why, because there's a picture of Ephraim.
Uh-huh.
I'm reading an article right now. There's a picture of Ephraim right here.
Yeah.
He's on the right.
Yeah, and they're both thin as shit.
Look at him. He doesn't even...
Yeah.
And then, of course, fucking... Miles Teller's character is bald.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, look, I mean, I know that this is quote-unquote based on a true story, but if it's based off a true story, the guy on the right that, you know, Ephraim,
uh-huh.
looks more like Hayden Christensen
yeah.
than Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
And the guy on the left looks more like Joe Satriani. You know?
Yeah. So that's why I don't take the subject matter seriously, because this is a Todd Phillips version of a true story. Right?
Well, no, it's not a true story. It's based on a true story.
You know what I mean? Based on a true story. Which, that could mean that the whole thing is completely different, and then one thing might be true.
No, from reading this article, most of the stuff that was in the movie is in the article.
Uh-huh.
Practices, see 5 million rounds of ammo were grounded at the Bishkek airport in Kyrgyzstan.
Mm-hmm.
Their authorities were imposing a penalty of $300,000 a day while not allowing the plane to leave. Bush tasked Robert Gates with getting the ammo released. The dude certainly couldn't get it done. So, you know, the whole bullet thing
yeah.
wasn't a big deal. Still, the arms deal, Sue found a groove. Hold on. Let me read this. The arms deal soon found a groove to the point where it was almost on autopilot when a jealous competitor triggered a defense criminal investigation. I'm sorry, investigative service probe. The agency couldn't get a handle on major arms fraud in Afghanistan and Iraq, where billions of dollars disappeared. But they could obsessively hunt the dudes, although they were actually delivering the goods.
Yeah.
Even Divaroli's sworn enemy, an Albanian whistleblower who later died suspiciously, thought the investigator, Michael Mentalvos, was unhinged. The Army resisted his demands that it stop shipping AEY product, since the need for AK-47 ammo was desperate, but Mentalvos eventually prevailed after procuring pictures of bullets with Chinese casings. So who knows how real that was? He could have just taken a picture.
Yeah.
It would be months before a new chain of ammo supply could be opened, and so the Afghan security services fought a war critically underarmed. Divaroli was sentenced to 4 years behind bars, while the other two dudes, quote-unquote, were given house arrest for a period of months. Still, Todd Phillips is filming the book with Jonah Hill. Arms and the Dudes, the book, goes on sale later on. It's actually on sale now.
Yeah.
But...
And that's what I mean about this movie. take the idea and some of the actual events from the true events, and then you make it into a Hollywoodized movie.
Right. See, okay? there's pictures of it right there.
Yeah. So that's why I don't take this movie seriously in that regard. It's, like I said, it's a Todd Phillips version of this. And so that's why I'm fine with whatever deviations that the movie makes, because I don't expect it to be a documentary.
Yeah. Them driving through the Triangle of Death was not true either.
Okay. Fine. That's fine.
So there's the picture of them unboxing the crates.
Yeah.
So...
So, anyway.
But, yeah. Hold on a second. Okay. So, the 2 million rounds of ammo they intended to move from Kabul to Tirana had to be repackaged to shed the Chinese lettering. So, that was true. The ordnance had been in possession of the Albanians for decades, but its Chinese imprint put, quote-unquote, the dudes on the wrong side of the law. All sorts of corrupt practices made it possible to move the munitions. So the stuff was never in Albania when they got a hold of it.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like.
When they were at one of the 700 warehouses that they
had. Or maybe
had.
It was. Hold on. Divaroli was nevertheless an arrogant en route from the airport to Tirana, the capital of Albania. Okay. He announced that given 20 men with guns, I could take this country. Later, he cowered in an office when the guy behind the desk rose and revealed prison tats on his arms. For whatever reason. I don't know. Why he was cowering in an office. In the corner sat a young man with shark-like eyes who didn't speak. He was the prime minister's son, a member of the family, as the Albanian mob was known. The deal was he was there to save would later send him to jail, Divaroli. 2 million rounds of ammo. See, in the movie, it was 100 million.
Yeah, it was 100 million.
Hold on a second. 2 million rounds of ammo they intended to move to Kabul. Maybe that was part of the 100 million rounds. It was just 2 million rounds that were...
Yeah, because then later on it says the 5 million rounds of ammo were held at the airport.
Yeah, so. Same was true when five million rounds of ammo. The authorities were imposing a penalty of $300,000 a day. Bush himself got involved with it and said we need that fucking ammo and sent Robert Gates to get it done.
Yeah,
because the other guys couldn't. But there were three of them, and they only show two of them in the movie. So yeah. I don't know what was going on in the fact that maybe this third dude.
Maybe he didn't get permission.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is that he didn't sign off on it because he didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
His name is, I want to say Piscarelli or whatever, but they were fucking stoners. Uh-huh. So in the movie, these guys, when Miles Teller's playing them straight, sorry, he was stoned. They were waking and baking.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, they showed Miles Teller smoking a lot of weed in the movie.
I know, but not when he was doing the stuff.
Yeah.
So,
and that's what I mean. That's why I don't take the movie fully seriously in that regard. It's just a movie.
David Packhouse, Ephraim Divaroli.
I've learned in the last few years to never take a movie based on anything as, what do they call it, as Bible.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't, because it's Hollywood.
Alex Podrisky.
Even reality shows on TV aren't reality shows.
So, oh, and the pot dealer that they were going to see but wasn't home.
Yeah.
That's Alex. That's okay. Supposed to be Alex.
All right. See? Okay. I mean, look, even with reality shows, you got some guy, some producer standing in the background going, no, we want to do this. We want to do that. Don't change this, change that. And it's not real. It's all just a show.
Yeah, I know.
I'm, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So anyway, fuck the critics on this movie. This is an entertaining movie. Yeah.
If it didn't say based on a real story,
yeah,
the story is fun.
Yeah, it is.
You know, with the exception of the stupid, it's not just stupid, it's the fucking useless Miles Teller, you know, family drama shit. Yeah. That was completely unnecessary.
It was. It was.
You know, the tertiary. It's the third story.
Yeah.
You know, or the third whatever you want to call
it. Yeah, and also I didn't need the fucking end of the movie John Wick thing where they show Miles Teller being pulled out of the trunk and then like, oh, how did it get to this point kind of shit. And, you know.
A lot of people complain about that, but I was okay with it.
I don't, you know what I mean? I already know the path that this story is going to go into. This is a fairly predictable movie. Okay, so it just seemed like unnecessary.
Really? So you knew that he was going to get fucking ganged up on and thrown into a trunk in Albania?
Well, I've already seen Lord of War, and this movie is just a different version of Lord of War.
I'm just saying. You already knew that. So you knew what was going to happen.
You knew he was going to get caught up in some shit, because right. that's a movie. And movies always got to have some kind of conflict. And, you know, I could so if they're dealing with multiple countries, dealing with arms and ammo, there's going to be a situation that's probably going to show up, especially because it's a movie, where they're held at gunpoint or they get grabbed for a little while,
right,
or something.
Again, the beginning of the story doesn't... It sets the thing in motion. It's fine.
But it doesn't hurt the movie for me. Just one of my little tidbits.
Okay.
My little thingies.
Oh.
All right. So other than those few things, the marketing, the girlfriend, you know, this is a good movie. It's good. Yeah. I kept waiting for the next scene. Like, what are they going to do next? What are they going to talk about? What are they going to get involved with? And Jonah Hill, holy shit. Look, I've been a fan of Jonah Hill's since Superbad as an actor, because I've seen him in a bunch of different roles, you know, Moneyball, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And in this, same thing, man. The guy is like his Wolf of Wall Street character, but more secretly slimy, if you will. Because this character, Wolf of Wall Street, is obviously slimy. But in this movie, he's different.
Yeah, he's just a piece of shit.
Yeah, he's hands-on. He's methodical. He is a scary motherfucker when it comes down to it. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, again,
you see how what I mean? How he uses Teller as his best friend the whole time. You know, his quote-unquote best friend. And then when things get down to it, then he's ready to backstab him in an instant.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. So, what was some of your favorite parts of the movie? I mean, my favorite part was the triangle of death.
I mean,
I love the whole thing. Because then they get to the military commander played by Patrick St. Esprit. You know, the Captain Santos. You know, he's just laying on a couch.
St. Esprit.
He's just laying on a couch, fucking bored as fuck in the heat. Hey, your guns are here. Oh, all right.
Yeah, that part was pretty good. I mean, talk about favorite parts. We're not 12.
What'd you like about it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, this is my favorite part of the movie. Right, God, it was great.
I'll repackage it. How about that?
Don't even ask me a question about it. Just go into what you like, and I'll go into what I like. Make it a lot easier.
All right, fine. Okay, so lastly, I think what I liked was the soundtrack. Okay? There's been some good soundtracks in movies lately.
After I made my complaint about fucking movies that you know, they play these great songs,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden they transition into wherever they are, inside, yeah, a house, or and they're playing a completely different song.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're now doing it.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, come on. Come on.
I know.
That was my fucking idea like 4 years ago.
Yeah. You know what the funny thing about Todd Phillips is that I when I've seen him do little cameos in his movies, which I don't think he showed up in this one.
I'm pretty sure he's in Vegas.
But when I've seen him in other movies do his cameos, I always noticed how familiar he looked, right? And then when I looked him up, his bio today, when I was writing my review for it, I found out that he was in the first season of Taxi Cab Confessions. He was one of the taxi drivers.
Right.
And I was like, holy fuck, I remember that guy.
Yeah, I remember him. I remember, I don't know if you said something about it or a while back. I think you talked about it a while back at Hangover 3.
Maybe, it was possible, yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, most of this movie I liked.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the scene where he pulled out the gun, you know, and shot it in the air. He's like, don't worry, I got a class 5 fucking arms license or whatever he said.
Yeah.
And then, you know, tossed the M3 back in the car.
Yeah.
That, the triangle of death.
Yeah, with the actor Sean Taub, played Marlboro.
Yeah. And then what
else? He played Jensen in Iron Man.
Oh, okay.
And he's also on the show that I'm going to talk about tonight on Netflix for Homeland.
Right. And then I forgot what else. Doesn't matter. I like the movie overall.
Don't Fear the Reaper.
Yeah.
That part had me laughing my ass off. Who the fuck sings Don't Fear the Reaper in front of a group of old people?
That guy.
That guy. All right. So anyway, I gave the movie, I was debating on whether to give it a 7.5 or an 8, and eventually I gave it an 8 because I like the movie through and through.
Yeah. I've readjusted. I it's not an 8. It's a 7. It's a strong 7.
Uh-huh.
There are minor issues, you know, after checking out the article, yeah, and doing some research and stuff like that.
It's also my surprise after seeing the trailers for it and then what we got from it.
Yeah, exactly. But it, in my opinion, if you're going to do based on a true life,
yeah,
adding in stuff just to add in stuff doesn't work.
Oh.
You know, again, like the triangle of death bullshit, you know, it would have been a much stronger movie had they followed along with like this part right here where they had to deal with Kabul and the Afghanistan army and where are they here? Come on. Boop doop doop doop. I will find you. Right here. If they had stayed with the Albania stuff,
yeah,
if they had in the Kabul stuff, giving us some more background on really what was going on, that, you know, the penalties that were going on with Robert, you know, getting Robert Gates involved.
Yeah.
And then finding out that there was a competitor that triggered a defense criminal investigative service probe.
Yeah.
And not the guy that fucking phoned it in.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they should have brought in this Michael Mantavlos guy.
Yeah.
You know, that would have that I think that would have made a movie even stronger.
Yeah.
But, you know, they went for Phillips went for the quick and easy.
Yeah. And that's another problem I have with the critics on this movie is that what do they expect? Like, this movie's supposed to be based in reality to a point. And what, these guys are supposed to go away for 30 years plus or you know, or they get away scot-free? You know, it, in the real world, it's all about who you know and who you blow, okay? It's not simple. And they keep on doing this black and white shit. And there's more to it than that. You know, you can get out of anything if you know the right people and you grease the right palms. And that's what these characters were doing for a while, was they were greasing the right palms, and they were getting through what they needed to get through.
Well, that sort of. I mean, we don't know the whole story because, again, it's a movie thing. So you're basing all of this off of the fucking movie and not the real
movie
life.
Itself, okay? The movie itself has realistic consequences, okay?
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to get at, okay? It doesn't have to have this happy Hollywood ending or anything. Or like where Miles Teller turns state's evidence against fucking, you know, Jonah Hill or something, right? Or some shit. And then he goes in the witness protection program or whatever. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So, all right. So, anyway, we both liked War Dogs.
Yes.
And I can't wait to see what Todd Phillips comes up with next. All right. So, anyway, on to my Netflix pick of the week. This one is actually on Hulu with Hulu's deal with Showtime. They have the first four seasons. If you have a subscription with Hulu, the commercial-free one, or the Showtime package added on, one or the other, the first four seasons of Homeland are on Hulu. Homeland came out in 2011, stars Claire Danes, Mandy Patinkin, who is, I guess, you know, he's actually on the I'm in the fourth season right now watching it, and he's still on the show. This is like the longest he's ever been on anything, because before that he always quit, because, you know, he had that attitude in Hollywood for so long. And it also stars Damian Lewis. Damian Lewis, English actor, but he always plays an American over here. Anyway, Claire Danes works as a field analyst for the CIA. And the best way I could describe this show is it's like 24, but in a realistic way. Not this constant fucking action, 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 action thing. It's more the behind the scenes kind of shit, you know, the you know, the undercover agents, you know, infiltrating these terrorist cells and you know, the politics of everything, how there's sometimes when they have a decision that's so simple to make, they end up not being able to make it because of politics getting involved, you know.
Right.
it's just, look, I don't want to give a judgment on the fourth season yet, but through the first three seasons, especially the first two, it is really good. There are some twists that happen. And I mean, look, I was waiting for a twist to happen with Damian Lewis's character because he is a soldier. He was a soldier in Iraq who was a POW for 8 years, presumed dead. And he gets found after a raid on an installation and he gets sent back and they try to make him a hero and all this stuff, right? And there's something about him that Claire Danes is she just doesn't know what to think. She knows what to think, actually. She knows that there has been a POW who's been turned by Al-Qaeda, and she's 100% positive it's Damian Lewis's character. And the show deals with her suspicions, no one believing her, and also deals with Damian Lewis trying to reintegrate with his family and dealing with all the shit he dealt with while he's being tortured over there. And you find all these things out about his character throughout the first two seasons where it's not just cut and dry. There's so many different layers to this character and what he's been through and you know, his agendas and motivations and shit like that. And one of the twists that happens, you're like, holy shit. I mean, they totally just blindside you with it. Anyway, so far I would give Homeland a really good rating. It's entertaining. It can get slow at times. I think my biggest problem is because I binge watched it. I watched 36 episodes in the span of a week. So, and each episode's almost an hour long.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's the biggest problem for me is that at times it starts to feel a little tedious. But I bet you if you're watching it one episode a week, it wouldn't seem that way. So anyway, I highly recommend it. It's got a 90% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And they plan on doing at least 8 seasons of the show. So it's really good. Check it out, Homeland.
Okay. Mine is Meet the Robinsons, which is, I think it's one of the first films that was released by Disney with John Lasseter as the head.
Yeah.
And it's 94 minutes. Basically, it's based on the book called A Day with Wilbur Robinson. We meet this kid. His name is Lewis. He's an aspiring 12-year-old inventor at an orphanage whose inventions have been scaring off potential parents.
He's an inventor.
The peanut butter and jelly fiasco, you know, the memory thing that he was trying to do. He builds a memory scanner.
Uh-huh.
It takes it to the school science fair, where he meets a 13-year-old kid named Wilbur. Mysterious boy claiming to be a time cop from the future. Lewis doesn't believe him. So as they're trying to, as Lewis is trying to set up his scanner machine, a bad guy with a bowler hat manages to show up. The bowler hat is kind of it's a futuristic device that goes over and sabotages the machine and causes Lewis all these problems and throwing the science fair into complete chaos, you know. And it's just another thing that every time that he tries to build something, it's always a failure invention.
Yeah.
You know.
Like Doc Brown?
yeah, sort of. But exactly. Using, you know, just basic anything that you can find in your house products.
Yeah.
Now, the mysterious boy Wilbur also helps Lewis, throughout the movie. They finally meet at the orphanage after the whole science fair thing. Lewis is not happy, but he helps Wilbur repair the scanner, but Lewis wants Wilbur to prove that he's from the future, so he does. He takes him to the future.
Uh-huh.
So as he takes him to the future, he takes him to the house. The house is filled with people, and there's paintings of everybody except for the father, Cornelius.
Mm-hmm.
As the movie goes on, we find out that Lewis is Cornelius.
Okay.
You know, and the guy with the bowler hat is the kid that was Lewis's roommate in the orphanage.
Yeah.
You know, he kept waking him up and causing all these problems. So he just got angry and takes out all of his revenge on fucking Lewis, right?
Yeah.
And then they become friends. It's okay. The animation is very Disney-esque.
Yeah.
You know. The first time I saw it, I was pretty impressed with the fact that they were able to do certain things. Overall, the movie is just another Disney movie.
Yeah.
It's like watching The Lorax or anything else like that. However, the movie on after that was Big Hero 6.
Uh-huh.
So I got to watch Big Hero 6 and Meet the Robinsons. And these movies are separated by 6 years, 7 years, give or take.
Yeah. Yeah, 2015 was Big Hero 6 in 2015?
I think so. Yeah, 2015 because I just moved the puck. I just did the diecast.com thing.
Yeah,
and that was one of them. It was like mid year or early year 2015, if I remember correctly.
No, it came out at the end of the year, like October or something.
Maybe it doesn't matter.
Anyway,
2015. The difference in animation,
yeah,
between Meet the Robinsons and Big Hero 6 is fucking miraculous.
Yeah.
From the hair, because like in Meet the Robinsons, the hair is more cartoony.
Yeah.
You know, it stays in place. It doesn't really move.
Solid piece like a wig.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, like those fake wigs.
Yeah.
You know, like if you watch the Primus Winona's Big Brown Beaver.
Exactly.
Those types of, okay. So watching part of Big Hero 6, and it's the beginning part where Hero is talking with the two older inventors,
yeah,
after showing his little magnetic robot thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you see his hair, and you're like, this is incredible. I mean, 7 years to go from whatever, cartoony hair to almost realistic hair.
Yeah.
That's an amazing amount of work.
Yeah.
Because considering that in that 7 years, maybe two films. Maybe. Generally, yeah, if you're one company, if in 7 years you produce about two films, you know,
yeah,
in that span.
Yeah, they had like Bolt and Frozen, Tangled.
Yeah, but generally a regular studio, because Disney has such a huge studio, they can produce as much as they want.
Yeah.
A regular studio produces on average, and if it's traditional animation, it's once every 5 years, unless you're doing a series,
yeah,
then it takes anywhere between 22 and 36 months to do 22 episodes for the following year.
Yeah.
So all of that stuff set, Disney has really improved their animation skills year after year after year. And I think that the start of the whole process was with Meet the Robinsons. It was used as a movie to test where they were and where they can go.
Yeah, because right before that they had, what were they, had Chicken Little and The Wild.
Yeah, I don't know if they did Chicken Little, but...
They did. Disney did Chicken... Well, Disney did Chicken Little. I just don't know if the same people were involved with it or not.
Well, let's find out. I don't think that Disney did Chicken Little, but I could be wrong. Henny Penny. Yeah, you're right. So... that came out in 2005. That was 2 years before.
Yeah.
So 2 years. And even then, I, you know, Chicken Little's not that great of a movie.
No.
You know.
I think just the pig eating corn was the only funny part.
Yeah. That movie made $300 million.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was marketed at kids.
Yeah.
So if you want to make money, fucking market your shit towards kids.
Exactly. That's why they're making a Crude sequel right now.
Yeah. Anyways.
Which is going through rewrites.
Doesn't surprise me. Meet the Robinsons is not a bad movie. It's not a great movie, but overall, I mean, if you watch the movie, it's fun, it's entertaining. It's about a 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not any more or anything less.
It's not a Disney classic.
No, it definitely isn't a Disney classic. I was trying to see what they got. Because generally when I do these, yeah, 6.3 out of 10 for Rotten Tomatoes. 61 out of 10. You know, like I said, it's about a 5.
Yeah.
And, overall, it's one of the worst theatrically released animated features issued under the Disney label in quite some time. I can't agree with that.
What about The Wild?
Yeah. There's tons of movies that Disney released that were just fucking frightfully awful.
Yeah.
You know, Meet the Robinsons is hardly anywhere near that. I mean, look at Bolt.
Yeah.
Actually, Meet the Robinsons is a better movie than Bolt.
I didn't like Bolt.
Yeah. So.
And Oliver and Company.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about Oliver and Company?
Oh, yeah. I have all those movies.
I bet you do.
But, yeah, Oliver and Company, but, you know, like, any of the Fievel movies.
Yeah.
With the exception of the first one, even though they're Don Bluth movies, and I'm a fucking gigantic Don Bluth fan.
Yeah.
Most of the, you know, an American Tale movie sequels were just that, you know, All Dogs Go to Heaven, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Well, the first All Dogs Go to Heaven was, that was just a fucking stroke of lightning right there for Don Bluth, because that fucking movie, must have made, you know, $1 billion. Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise. Yeah, MGM. Vic Tabak. I mean, it starts off with the fucking, the dog gets killed.
Yeah.
You know? Come on. So, I mean, that right there is gutsy. Swear to God, this movie had to have already, I mean, it's probably made $1 billion. I mean, $27.1 million at the box office. Budget was only 13. That's not too bad.
That ain't a billion.
It ain't a billion.
But I bet you it made a shitload on home video.
That's what I mean. It's probably made $1 billion since then, because everybody that I knew, that was, and kids still today, All Dogs Go to Heaven, that's one of my favorite movies. That was an awful movie. So
I never cared for it.
I've
never been a huge fan of talking animals. Sometimes it works, like with Babe, but most of the time, I don't know. I just don't care for talking animals.
Yeah.
And, of course, Finding Dory.
Yeah. I mean, it just depends on the movie.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I know that was a tangent, but Meet the Robinsons, I gave a 5 because, it's the cusp. It really is. It's the cusp of them moving forward and becoming a full-time Pixar-style studio.
Yeah, because I think Tangled came out, 3 years after that?
Something like that.
Yeah, 2010, roughly. Yeah.
So, all right.
All right.
Giggity, giggity.
All right, so let me get my two news bits out of the way. There's this been this kick lately in Hollywood where they're turning a lot of classic Hollywood films, such as like Lethal Weapon, stuff like that, into a TV series. I mean, they've been doing it forever, but it seems like lately they're doing it a lot. And there's actually 3 movies that they've announced that they're turning into a TV series. The first one is... I don't have any info on it, really. It's just, but they're turning the movie Snatch into a TV series.
With Rupert Grint.
Yeah, starring, you know,
Hermione's boyfriend.
Mr. Weasley.
Yeah.
Ron Weasley.
You know, that works if he plays...
You going to say the Pikey?
Yeah, no. What?
You know,
get the fuck out of here.
Brad Pitt's character.
No, he plays...
Turkish?
Is that his name? Yeah.
Jason Statham's character?
No. Why? How would that even... How could those two possibly have crossed your mind? Rupert Grint or Jason Statham or Brad Pitt? I'm just asking. How did those two cross your mind when the obvious choice was Jason Statham's partner?
Tommy.
Thank you.
Bricktop hates Tommy.
Yes.
I was going to throw up Tommy next, too.
No, you weren't. You were going to say Bricktop. You were going to say Bricktop's henchman or fucking...
I would not say Bricktop.
Any of the fucking... Bricktop's everybody else except for Tommy. You would have gone through the entire list. Which is funny. I just find that fucking hilarious. The first two people you picked.
Well, how excited you got. Man, I thought you were going to throw up one of the iconic characters from the movie. That's why.
No.
All right. So...
Well, it depends on who's doing it. Because you can't do Snatch on regular TV.
No.
That's like when TBS or Comedy Central or any one of these other fucking movies show things like We're the Millers or The Hangover or Snatch or whatever. You know, these ultra violent with a lot of cuss words in it.
Edit the shit out of it.
At 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Don't you mean, what the Frank?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
What
so,
the Full House?
So, yeah, I don't even know who's doing that one. But the other two that I read about are, they're turning the classic comedy from Barry Seinfeld from 1995, Get Shorty.
Yeah.
Turning that into a TV series on Epix.
Well, Epix is okay, but Epix is owned by DirecTV, yet you have to subscribe to the channel to watch it.
Yeah.
So okay. Guess what we're not doing?
No. Exactly.
But it will work because Justified worked.
Well, here's the problem. This is going to be very loosely based on Get Shorty, which was done as an Elmore Leonard novel.
Right.
And the character Chili Palmer, who they didn't even say he's going to be named Chili Palmer. They're going to have different named characters in it. Chris O'Dowd is supposed to be playing the John Travolta character of Chili Palmer.
Okay.
He's supposed to be working with the loan sharking industry from Nevada instead of Miami. Like, you know, he was with the mafia in the original movie.
Hmm.
And Ray Romano is going to be playing the Gene Hackman character of Harry Zim.
Okay.
You know, the movie producer.
I could see that. Ray Romano was really good in Vinyl.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be coming out in summer of 2017. Look, Get Shorty is a classic. It's one of those movies you go back and you're like, holy fuck, why does anyone talk about it? And eventually it's going to be one of my retro movies that I do a review on. But... for them to turn it into a series and then change a lot of the characters, I don't know if that's really going to fly. And I personally, I don't think it's going to work. I really don't.
Let's see.
Modified and modernized take.
Yeah, I'm not even going to bother with it.
Yeah, so it's pretty much they take the name of the fucking movie and then turn it into something completely different. So they're just riding on the coattails of the name.
Yeah, I mean, okay, this guy, Davey Holmes, has been a writer and producer for the past decade.
Yeah.
He's been with Damages, canceled. In Treatment, never heard of it. Pushing Daisies, canceled. Chicago Code, never heard of it. Shameless, canceled.
Was it canceled?
Yeah.
That was the William H. Macy show on Showtime.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's not it. That one hasn't. I was thinking something else.
Oh, wait, I think Shameless is on HBO, but anyway.
Shameless isn't. It's Showtime, I think. Yeah, Showtime. Yeah. I'm sorry. That one is fine. But the other ones, never heard of In Treatment. Where the fuck did that one come from? Maybe. Hold on a second. Let's see if we can find who makes In Treatment. HBO.
Oh, that's where Gabriel Byrne is a psychiatrist.
Okay. December 2010.
Yeah.
Canceled. Damages. That one was canceled.
I think Damages with Glenn Close on FX. Yep.
Yeah. Final episode, 2012. That one just ran its course. Pushing Daisies.
Pushing Daisies, I think, was only on for a season. Oh, two seasons.
Two seasons. It looked interesting.
All of these shows got high critical acclaim.
Yep. And then I never heard of the Chicago Code.
I think it was a cop show.
Yeah.
100%. Damn.
Is it still on? I can't tell.
No.
Final episode, 2011. TV series, 2011.
Yeah.
Canceled. It was such a great show and got such great fucking ratings. Why was it canceled? Anyways.
Look, all of the stuff that he's been involved with had good critical acclaim, but they still don't last for whatever reason.
Yeah. Now, they say here that, you know, Elmore Leonard-infused drama, like Justified, is proof positive that an expansion of the author's worlds can make for gripping TV. However, Justified worked because Elmore Leonard knew about it.
Yeah, he was involved.
Yeah, well, mostly involved. His family was involved 100% in it. I think it was his daughter.
Uh-huh.
Daughter or his son. I think it was his daughter was involved to make sure that, you know, they stayed true to the characters. And Dennis Farina. This is a joke. Just because you want to do something doesn't make it good.
Uh-huh.
And if you're taking source material and changing it, sorry.
Yeah.
That only works if it's fucking Fargo.
Yeah, exactly. And Fargo, look, all the pieces fell into the right place with Fargo. All right. But in this, look at this Get Shorty thing bleeds into the next one for me. They're going to turn the Departed movie from 2006 into a TV show on Amazon. And right now it's currently in development. They still haven't announced a release date for it. But here's the problem. The show is going to be based in Chicago, not Boston like the original movie. And none of the characters that were in that movie are in this show.
Oh, it's a reboot too.
So why the fuck are you even calling it The Departed? That's my point. It's like you're just taking the name and using it to sell, to get viewers. Like, I don't know, like that show that came out with Dennis Hopper called Crash.
Yeah.
That was based on the TV, on the movie. All right. Which I don't think had anything to do with the fucking movie. All right. I never saw it, so I can't fully judge it, but still.
I'm trying to find out. Jason Richman, who created Detroit 187.
Which was on for one or two seasons.
Canceled. Updated spin on the two-way undercover concept, which was set in Boston, dealt with the Irish mob and the Hong Kong original Infernal Affairs.
Yeah.
Okay, I can. That's fine. I mean, because Departed is just a fucking remake of...
Yeah.
So you can't get pissed off if I forgot about it. You really can't get pissed off at someone remaking a remake.
But don't call it The Departed. That's my point. You're taking an Oscar-winning film and then turning it into a show that has nothing, barely anything to do with it, just in certain concepts.
I'm not even going to watch it. I don't give a shit. So there. Oh, well, there's Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan is going to star John Krasinski.
Yeah.
That TV show. So, I mean, Amazon is just trying to they're trying to compete with Netflix, and I'm sorry, too little too late.
Everyone is doing a series now. Even Cinemax has their own series.
Cinemax has had series always. It's not like a new thing.
Oh, I don't have Cinemax, so I don't know. But someone told me about a show called Banshee that's really good on there.
Yeah, and there's another one that they did a couple years back. I can't remember the name right off the top of my head. I want to say it's Homeland, but it's kind of like that.
Okay.
It's more action adventure-y type of thing, though.
Yeah.
So, one of my favorite all-time actors, John C. McGinley, is going to be in Stand Against Evil. And we don't know jack shit about this fucking TV show. And it comes out, like, October.
Yeah.
Like, Ash versus Evil Dead comes out October 2nd.
Yeah.
And this one comes out, I don't know, I'm on the page right now.
Go to about.
There it is. November 2nd. Okay. So exactly 1 month later.
On IFC.
On IFC, yes. Thank you. It's got John C. McGinley, Jeanette Varney, and Dana Gould. Dana Gould's fucking hilarious, and I think he helps write as well. Stand Against Evil follows Stan Miller, a disgruntled former sheriff. It's basically just take John C. McGinley's character from Scrubs, and there he is. He's from a small New England town who's forced into retirement. He has trouble relinquishing his authority to the new town sheriff, who is played by Varney. Her name is Evie Barrett. They form an unlikely alliance when they both begin to realize things are not quite right. Together, they valiantly fight a plague of unleashed demons that have been haunting the town, which happens to be built on the site of a massive 17th century witch burning.
Okay.
I'm all in. New England town, witch burnings, demons, John C. McGinley, Dana Gould. I am fucking in.
It's like Gravity Falls meets Ash vs. the Evil Dead.
Fuck yeah. And I and just the fact, I mean, I saw a trailer for it on IFC, and there's a picture of John C. McGinley on the page on the website, for Stand Against Evil, and he's standing there with a shovel, you know, across his back and his arms over the shovel
and
type of thing.
He looks tired.
No, he looks pissed, and there was something that happened, and he either beat the shit out of somebody with a shovel and then had to bury him, but he ended up burying something. And he says something that's just fucking off the charts funny, and, you know, and totally John C. McGinley, you know. Uh-huh. And I can't fucking wait. Like I said, he's one of my favorite goddamn actors. And he was in Car 66, Where Are You, with Buster Poindexter.
You mean Car 54?
Yeah, whatever.
I never saw the remake.
Did I say Car 66?
Yeah.
I meant, Car 50. You know what I mean. Car 66, Where Are You?
Yeah.
Duh. Stupid. So, anyways.
I always remember John C. McGinley as the asshole director in Point Break for the FBI.
Yeah, yeah. He's been in a fucking lot of goddamn things.
He was in Surviving the Game and Scrubs. He was in the fucking... He was in the sequel.
He was in Wall Street.
He was in Are We Done Yet? Ice Cube family movie.
Talk Radio. Yeah, he was Are We There Yet?
He was in Are We Done Yet.
Oh, Are We Done Yet? And yeah, because he was a neighbor or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
And he knew everything. He could do anything.
Yeah, born on the 4th of July.
He was like the only good thing in that movie.
Jesus Christ, he's been in... Okay, so he was in Platoon.
Yeah.
Wall Street, Talk Radio, Born on the 4th of July, Nixon, and Any Given Sunday.
Oh, and plenty of other things, too.
Jesus Christ. Ground Floor, which I didn't care for him in Ground Floor because he was basically... But that's because Bill Lawrence was writing it, who created Scrubs. and then the Belko Experiment, Rounding Third, Red Barber in 42, Glengarry Glenn Ross. What fucking movie hasn't this guy been in? Burn Notice. All right. I'm just going to, I have to fucking Highlander 2.
Office Space, dude. I love them. I am a Michael Bolton fan.
Yep. Wagons East. Wow. Okay. I wouldn't have expected that. Are We Done Yet?
I love them in Surviving the Game.
Coin Fits, the Two Tickets to Paradise, Watch It, Intensity. This guy has just been in every fucking thing. The only thing he hasn't been in is like a Star Wars and a Star Trek movie and a Die Hard movie. He should be in fucking Die Hard. That's the evil bad guy.
Not Cumberbatch.
Both of them.
Your brothers?
No. Cousins.
Not related. No relation.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it? Jones, right?
No, Johnson.
Johnson. God damn it. Why couldn't I think of that? Yeah, Johnson and Johnson. Hey, no relation.
This is Agent Johnson. No, the other one. It's so funny because you know what the other person said on the phone. It's like, you know what he said.
Yeah.
The black one?
No, he said the other guy's name. But again, you know, they would have said the same thing with Robert Davi.
But just with his reaction, it was like, no, the other one.
No, the other one. And you know that on the phone, he probably did say that.
Yeah.
He probably did say the black one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
no,
what I mean.
The other one. Because it was probably the director.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, there we go. See? And all of a sudden, the story forms.
Yes.
You have fucking John C. McGinley as one of the bad guys. You have Benedict Cumberbatch as the other bad guy. Look, I'm telling you, Benedict Cumberbatch or even the dude that was in the other guys that played the banker. I can't remember his name. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
But Benedict Cumberbatch as, and I know that he won't fucking like this, but as the son of Hans Gruber going after the entire family when there's the 30th anniversary of the Nakatomi. Fucking writes itself, dude.
Die Hard 6, Son of Gruber.
No. Old habits die hard.
I know.
Son of Gruber. Fuck you and your fucking dumb titles. Swag bag.
Son of Kong.
Shut up.
All right. So, yeah, that's all I got, man. It's just it's turning fucking movies into TV series that sound like dumb ideas. I did not see any new trailers this week.
Batman, The Return of the Caped Crusaders with Adam West, Burt Ward, and Julie Newmar. That looks fucking awesome. It's a Warner Brothers animation.
Yeah.
It's a combination of Batman, the animated series, and Batman, the original series.
Yeah.
So it's got Joker, Penguin, I think it's got the Riddler.
Yeah.
Joker, Penguin, Riddler, and Catwoman. And from there, it's Burt Ward and Adam West doing their voices, man.
Yeah. They sound good. The same goofy fucking, humor. It looks like they haven't missed a beat.
So here's the teaser for
Stand Against Evil.
Stand Against Evil. Goats. So there's one of them. From the guys.
When the hell is there going to be a Tucker and Dale versus Evil sequel?
I don't know. I've been trying to read up on that. And there is one in the works.
Uh-huh.
They officially announced it last year at Comic-Con or something. Okay. Like that. There is a goddamn teaser for Stand Against Evil. There's another one. I think this is it, tied up. Yeah. A barrel of assholes. God damn it, this fucking TV show is going to rock.
I mean, look, it's obviously IFC's version of Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Oh, yeah.
But it looks good. It doesn't look stupid. It looks good.
Yeah, and there's the other. There's the official. This one's only 20 seconds. This is the one I saw. He's just digging a grave.
And let me see that, Ash. Let me see this trailer right here. Yeah.
Digging up my wife. What's it look like I'm doing?
Some good makeup.
Yep. Oh, you've seen this one. You've already seen this one. Mm. There's a better one.
League of God.
Jet Li fantasy movie.
Are they really doing a Jeepers Creepers 3?
Yeah. Ugh.
You have to sign up, man. You got to sign up for the YouTube thing, and then you won't have to watch trailers anymore.
I'm not spending any money for YouTube, Red. No, I'm a YouTube partner. Fuck off. It goes on for 15 minutes. Yeah, I don't want to fucking do that. All right. So.
All right.
Batman vs. Caped Crusaders is coming out at some point. I think it's this fall. It's just going to be on DVD. And then that's really all.
Will it be rated R?
I don't know.
Like The Killing Joke?
Yes.
All right. Good.
No, it's not going to be rated R.
Adam West. All right. So, for a couple of average Joes, War Dog Edition, I am Joe Spiegel.
Interrupting Cal.
Moo. God damn you, Mike. All right.
See, and I didn't say my name.
My name. All right. So we're going to say goodnight. Also, we'll be up next week talking about...
Hell or High Water.
Yeah, I was going to say Hellfire for some fucking reason. Hell or High Water, starring
Wake
Chris
the fuck
Pine
up.
And Ben Foster.
All right.
I drank a whole fucking big gulp of coffee. Didn't do shit.
That's not my problem.
Yeah, fucking, it's the show's problem now, isn't it?
Maybe you should wake up. Maybe you should exercise.
I did today.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Daddy.
Oh.
I totally ripped on you.
I totally had pizza tonight. It was so good.
All right, Billy Morgan.
All right. On that note, I will say goodnight.
Good night.
Bye.
Good show! Jolly good show! Jolly good show indeed!
Hakuna Matata, bitches!
Please share the podcast. The more people that listen, the better off we are. Thanks again.
For more great podcasts and my movie reviews, don't forget to visit www.acoupleofaveragejoes.com.
This is the end. It's the end. Finito! The end, I tell you! We're all going to nibble the dust!
Or go fuck yourself.